Welcome back to AI in the Sky, where we take the 10,000-foot view of what's going on with AI and bring it down to the ground for marketers to talk about how it's actually going to impact what we're doing in marketing today. I'm joined with my friend Mark Angelos, and today we're going to be covering a number of different news items, things that are going on to AI right now. But I wanted to kick it off with some predictions, not my predictions, but the predictions of I'm blanking on his name randomly. Sam Altman, that guy, like the man who's become like famous in everybody's minds over the last, I don't know, just year and a half, maybe not even. Like, I didn't even know this guy's name until OpenAI came out. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people did. He was big in Silicon Valley, but now it's like, oh my gosh, Sam Altman, the OpenAI CEO, has been like the new Steve Jobs, like Silicon Valley, right? With the amount of mentions he's get. But I wanted to cover like three different predictions that he's put out there that I think are crazy. They're crazy predictions, and people have called them crazy. Some people are like saying they're true. Some people are saying, oh, it's so far off. But I'm like, that's the reason why we need to talk about it, to find out what it actually means for marketing. The first one is one that you sent me, Mark, that somebody else was covering, I believe, at the, what was it? The AI Marketing Institute.
Oh yeah. Paul Retzer.
You sent me a post from this, and I had to sit down and like read it and then think about it, because it was such an alarming stat that I've been mulling on over after taking a week off last week. But that is, Sam Altman predicts that 95% of current marketing work will be done by AI.
What percentage?
I can't remember what the timeline for that was. Did he give a time frame for that?
Next few years, but yeah, it's sooner than people. Yeah.
5 years would be so fast for 95%. Think about how many people are in marketing right now.
So he was saying that when artificial general intelligence, which is the thing can think for real, that's when it's really going to hit. But we're already, the argument is, are we already scratching at AGI? Elon Musk says we are.
Well, it depends. Like everybody says, it depends on how you define AGI. You know, is it self-aware? Is it just based on, can it trick humans into making it think it's a human? It's the lines have gotten so fuzzy, as they should be, as we really start to scrutinize this thing. But then just the fact that it's going to automate 95% of current marketing work, I've had to take as a marketer, I'm like, okay, that means my job's going to disappear. Hello.
Or change.
Like, we should all be thinking about this, because we're all seeing that AI is becoming incredibly useful. We're seeing it take out things like writing. Like, I even posted recently where it's like just job posts for writers on Upwork have gone down a lot, right? Video editors have gone up. We'll see what Sora does to that. Those might go down. And you could draw correlations like, oh, well, there's just changing trends. And I'm like, no, marketers are still doing a ton of writing. But one writer, one writing team, like a team of two, can now do more because ChatGPT can write the rough draft and then it can just edit it and publish it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's already changing writing, whether you like it or not, but it's coming for all of marketing. Like 95%. That's a big thing.
If you think of what marketing does generally, it's a lot of it is repetitive tasks. It's creative for sure, but we know the machine can do creative. But that is what AI does well, is repetitive tasks based on data. Like, this fits.
Yeah. And we all know, like, this is why I love being a solo marketer now, because one of the things that I found I was doing as a marketer in-house was like, spent like an insane amount of time just convincing people of what I needed to do or of what I had already done. Right. So like 50% of my time was already shot just telling them what I was going to do or what I had already done, in order to convince them that this is the right plan of action.
I just had this conversation on LinkedIn this morning, ironically with our old buddy Joe, that I don't think it's so much that B2B doesn't get marketing or the CEOs don't understand it. It's that the systemic incentivization of these C-suite executives at these big firms is quarterly results. Their stock options are tied, their money are tied to them not understanding marketing, if you will. So I think that you as a solo marketer, Dan, and all the folks who are trying to do their own thing right now have an advantage, for good or for ill.
So I just did a search for how many marketers are in just the US, not even the world. There's about over 400,000 marketers.
Yikes.
Employed in the US right now as marketers. There's a lot of us. It's a huge industry. I tell people, I love this job. I love it. I tell people all the time, like, hey, if it doesn't work out so-and-so, like, there's always room in marketing, because marketing can accommodate so many different personalities and skill sets. And ways of thinking. You know, there's content marketing, there's strategic marketing. You can get more onto the math side or the art side. There's just so many different use cases, or things that need to be done in marketing. And it's a never ending black hole of stuff to do, right?
You'll find
you're never done.
No,
you can always feed it more money or more talent or more stuff.
There's the people side of marketing and there's the data side of marketing, and they both are growing.
Yep. And so you're wrestling with like 95%. And I'm like, well, let's say he's off. I still think it's going to be high, like maybe 70, 80% over the next, let's just say, give it a longer time frame, 10 years still.
But Dan, we've seen this before.
That means it's going to chip away over time. So over the next 10 years, everything's going to look different.
There's a better mousetrap.
70%.
If you go back to when like the automobile replaces the horse, this is where we are right now. Like I don't have a problem. I mean, yes, there's a big bumpy adjustment. And by the way, I come out of the sales world and that was the same thing there. Automation of outreach, automation of relationship building. You can argue it and it will take time and it won't be as smooth as Sam thinks it will be. But I think Sam's right, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's going to be some pain in that transition, because that's, and when you're talking about like big numbers like 95%, that's, and the a rate at which we're accelerating with AI, like that's scary fast change. And I don't think people are going to be ready for it. I imagine what the counter argument to it, it's like, well, it'll create new jobs. I'm like, 400,000 new jobs?
No.
I don't think so.
Actually, there is an aspect that has to be discussed. To bring some value here to the audience, I feel like the things that will slow down and possibly be offshoot jobs inside of marketing, these are the road bumps, if you will, for what Sam is predicting. Data privacy, number one. Like privacy of data, when you can automate, I can basically stalk you online, AI, build your profile. I can know everything about you. Like, there's an issue there. It's not known yet. There's cybersecurity, right? This is more than just cookies now. There's intellectual property. They're fighting that one out already. If you build a custom LLM for your marketing division, Dan, and it's learning off of public data that maybe isn't public data, like, you know, there's a fine line there. Authenticity. People always struggle with that, and that's still going to be a problem. Like, all these things could potentially slow down the process and create new little niche areas of marketing that aren't that big right now, but like brand standards. That's not a big deal inside of marketing. You kind of know. But when there's an AI now, you need to have a voice. You need to have a personification of your firm. There's like other aspects that AI introduces. So there will be some growth, but it's going to shift.
Yeah. But I imagine, like, let's say we cut 70% of jobs and we get 20 to 30% back.
I know what you
mean. We're still losing 40-50% aren't accounted for now. That's what I think will happen, is like, you will create new jobs, but it won't account for all the jobs that were once existed. But maybe, I've always said, like, marketing's kind of a black hole. You can always, like, actually my boss told me this a long time ago, who was in charge of operations at a large organization I was. He's like, dude, I could always throw more money and talent and time into marketing. It's like a never ending black hole of suck. It could just eat the whole budget of the whole organization. Would still have room left over to do more. I always walked away with that thinking, like, dang, okay. So it's always an efficiency play because it can always take more. And I'm like, I wonder if you can actually fill it with AI. Like, I wonder if there gets a point where it's like, actually, let's not do more marketing because it's already all being done.
Well, two things. One is, you always make more money from your existing clients than from getting new ones. That's just a business truism.
Yep.
So I think that in the marketing world, how do you squeeze more out of the relationship? There's a whole world there. I also think that if you think of jobs as an appendage of companies, right? That's why they exist. Companies exist to solve problems. Do problems go away? Like, do we just have a new set of them? So I'm not as dour about it as most, but I do agree with Sam that what we're currently doing, yeah, man, it's time to start thinking about what you do daily if you're in the marketing space.
Yep. I think the safest thing to do is to go all in on AI. I mean, clearly that's what we're here doing, talking about it, investigating it, pouring into it. We've talked about it on a previous podcast, and I think on the previous AI Live, and we'll talk about it again today. Like, this needs to be the priority to learn and to master and get into it.
But I want to recall something you said, Dan, a couple of shows ago, last show, I guess, a few weeks back. You mentioned there might be room at the table of the C-suite for an executive chief AI officer.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that that's crazy. And I think that who becomes that would be a guy like you, who's learned the thing and knows the space. Like, that's that evolution of what the inside corporate AI marketing people look like. That's not clear yet. And that's open, wide open right now.
Yeah. I mean, and there could be a chief AI person or like an AI director just within marketing. They're like the AI marketing director, just like there is like with paid media. Like you'll have a director of paid media, like you'll have a director of AI or ops. It'll be maybe fall under the ops person. I don't know. But that's part of the like the new job creation or the people in charge of AI or the people who specialize in running all their AI bots to accomplish what was paid media.
It's not really new job creation because you always had to have like an avatar understanding of who you're trying to sell to. Yep. The marketing person does that. It's just that they're going to be doing that now with an AI data oriented bend. So it's a different way of doing the same job.
So that was one of his, he's made multiple predictions. That's the first one we're covering here. The second prediction I thought was interesting. This gets me excited. Like the other one kind of scares me, but this one gets me excited. In the future, there will be a $1 billion one-person business or businesses. Because right now, there's multi-million dollar one-person businesses out there. They're all over the place. Like I think Card, that website creation tool, is one of those examples. He's probably doing over, you know, eight figures or over 10 million in revenue for that single little simple website builder. And might have a bookkeeper or something, but you know, it's mainly just one guy. But there will be, because of the efficiencies of AI, it'll be possible to scale to $1 billion in revenue. One, two people.
I know you're crazy. Familiar with Canva. That's if I'm not mistaken, it's a husband and wife team and there's only a few employees. There might only be two employees, but they're at like $2 billion right now.
Really?
ARR. No. Yeah, they are. Canva's huge.
They can't be that small. They got to be bigger than that. I'm like looking them up on LinkedIn right now.
Well, in terms of like the profitability per employee is what I'm getting at here. Like it's, yeah, it sounds
I'm sure it's high.
When Altman talks about a $1 billion one person business, so one person builds a $1 billion business. Sounds crazy. You look like a Justin Welch who's at $5 million a year right now in a few short years. Like that's, you can scale now in a manner and reach clients in a way you couldn't before. AI is not, it's almost, it's your workforce. So it makes sense if you just extrapolate it out.
Yeah, Canva has 13,000 employees. At least according to LinkedIn right now.
Oh, so I'm mistaken. But the point is either way.
There are definitely companies that are highly efficient that you're like, they're doing 500 mil with only 20 employees. You're like, those exist. They're out there.
I think we're a ways off from this. I think it will happen, but this won't be the first prediction. I see that coming in a few years' time. This one's going to be a ways off, but I still think it's possible.
Yeah. I'm even looking at it now as a solopreneur. I could do so much because of AI. Like I can all of a sudden repurpose content faster and just create more. Like people, like what used to take Gary Vee, like a team of 30 people to do all the content syndication and repurposing that he was doing, like literally one person would be able to do easily in a year from now.
Are you
like Gary Vee level stuff?
There's
a single person could do it.
Years ago, he rolled this out. There was the Gary Vee search engine. It's still there. You can Google it. And it's, you can look up any phrase or term and it'll find it wherever he posted it. It was, whether it was written or video. And my point is, that's the whole concept of what would that team have been to research for clips for repurposing? Like that's more than just 30 people. That model of I can just institute a whole network that I didn't need all these people. That's where this is going for sure.
Yep.
So $1 billion, I could see it.
So the reason why I think this is important for marketers is one, if you're not building a personal brand right now out on LinkedIn or something, it's getting easier than ever to do it. It's also noisier than ever, but at the same time, the tools for doing it are kind of easier. So they kind of balance out. But because of the first prediction we just talked about, it's probably a good time to start investing in that. It's getting easier than ever to be like a little bit of everywhere all the time.
So Dan, share some tips here as a guy who's done that and as a model for people who are maybe thinking about it. I'm in the marketing space. I know that this thing is changing. I'm not really sure. How would you recommend some people start to think about getting rolling and doing that?
It's a good question. I've run into many people, even executives. They're like, I don't know what to say. Like, what would I possibly have to give? I just read everybody's stuff and it's good. And I implement it. And it's cool. I'm like, people usually have way more to offer than they think, even if you're just starting out. But in case you feel like you have that inferiority complex, I usually just say start as a student. Like find an objective that you want to go at and just document your journey there. I mean, Gary Vee kind of talked about like the document your journey. It's a lot easier when you set some kind of goal, whether it's a really hard line in the sand, like I'm going to try to run. I mean, like if you're in fitness space, you're trying to run a first marathon or something, but in the business space, the marketing space, hey, I'm going to try to learn more about ABM, and I'm going to build my first ABM, and I'm going to try to make the ultimate ABM campaign, or I'm going to try to do the cheapest ABM campaign. I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to interview my way. I'm going to read all the books. I'm going to document it on the way there. I'm going to get in the conversations about account-based marketing. Like, is it possible to do awesome account-based marketing for $100 a month? Let's find out. That's the goal. Six months from now, I'll give you the report. Here's first month of what I plan to do. I'm going to read this book, and I'm going to try to do it under $100 a month, because that's all we have. You know,
I love it.
So trying to go small or try to go big, like, what does big look like? Setting some kind of arbitrary goal and something you want to learn and grow in, and then just documenting the journey. Easiest thing you could do. It's what I'm currently doing now with AI, because I haven't mastered AI. I have a lot to learn. And I'm documenting my way there, because I know a lot about different parts of marketing, but not this one. No one really does yet. So the only path forward was a student position. So take a student position, document your journey there.
That's great advice. Something I would share when I was to come up the chain, when I was in sales, I would always try to share a tip a day. In my case, it was on Instagram Live. But basically, here's a 30-second rundown of what I see from the ABM side of things, or how to build relationships with clients. Just rip it, post it, you know, warts and all. And I think that habit, that ended up going on for 4 years, by the way. I tried to challenge myself for 5 straight days, and it's like Seth Godin's writing his blog for 20 years now. But like, when people start to get in the habit of it, they'll get there. And I think you've done a masterful job of not being embarrassed to go give it a try. A lot of people have to get over themselves to be able to put themselves out there.
To me, that's part of the fun, is learning and doing new things. But
I know, but
some people do have a hard time.
The B2B world,
learning in public, I guess.
Yeah, they don't encourage falling on your face. It's in the bigger businesses, especially at the C-suite level, like, they don't want to, for executive branding, if you run a company, they're very leery about looking foolish. But in a world that's changing this fast, I don't see any other way of doing it.
Man, it's way easier to take the humble route and just be like, hey, I don't know everything. I mean, everybody already knows you don't know everything already.
Right.
So it's kind of like, everybody knows you're not perfect. Talk about it. It makes you way more relatable. And it's easier. I don't know. I get it though. Like, when you have a lot of eyes on you and you're an executive, if you're at a bigger company, like, people will look for the chink in the armor and take it apart. Right. Hence politics, right? That's why politics is hard to be in, because people are just looking for faults. So I get it, but tip a day is definitely approachable and an easy way to go, if not learning in public.
One thing I want to just hammer before you leave that point, the future of business, $1 billion, is the personality really matters. Like, you need to build, if you want to do a personal brand, you got to be personable. What kind of person are you? And I think that's the part where people want to just be smart, but you also have to be you. And that's not as easy as it sounds.
Is that a tie into the next one? Did you see the next one?
Dude, I'm a sales guy.
The next
guy,
one
come on.
Is Sam Altman's prediction. Not a prediction. It's more of like this less of a prediction and more of like, this is what's coming. In a conversation he had with Bill Gates, they were talking about the future of GPT and ChatGPT-5 and stuff. And he talked about the importance and future of personalization, because what they're finding at OpenAI is that everybody wants something different out of AI, different styles, different assumptions, different data to draw from. So a big thing that's coming to AI is personalization. This is something that's going to be dramatically important for marketers, because we all have different use cases for it. Even in our one use case of marketing, it's going to get stronger because we're going to have more specific marketing tools with AI. So that's going to happen. But even within our different industries and the different types of marketing we're doing, we're going to be able to customize and hone to be able to get more out of it. And these are some of these things that are happening right now. It's why I'm so bullish on it. It's because, dang, even if it didn't change, it's still going to change the next 10 years. Like, because we still haven't even found all the places it can currently fit in and solve existing problems, but it's going to continue to get better from things like this.
I have two thoughts on this. On the positive side, personalization in the old days, it was as extensive as using your name on the outreach email that was blasted to everybody, saying like uniform email, hey, Dan. But on the downside of it, when you can go in and figure out, like, I had posted on the New Jersey Devils back when, and you say, hey, go Devils in the closing of the email, great. But it can be abused. There's a cheese ball aspect that's really got to, that's the risk that companies that try to hyper personalize and don't do a great job of it. It's no different than in person. When you meet the meathead who's like, hey, hit you on the arm, and you're like, all right, guy, like, relax. So I think that there's an aspect that companies need to be smart in how they do this. Personalization, definitely more effective. It's been proven. If you can reference someone's recent piece of content in the outreach, if you can, more than just using their name, if you can share insights about shared commonality. In the sales days, it was, if you saw a picture of a hind on the desk of them playing soccer with their kid, you'd just talk about your kid in the soccer games. Next thing you know, you guys have something in common. That's going to happen in the AI marketing world, but it's got to be managed the right way.
Do you remember there was this company called Jawbone? They made speakers, and then they got into the wearables market.
I remember this.
I had one. I was part of a test market where they wanted me to leave a review on Amazon. They give me the product for free, whatever. And I got one. I remember using it. It was really cool. It was tracking your movement. It was tracking your sleep. I remember looking at the app and being like, oh, I can't wait to load this thing with data and get some personalized feedback. And it was kind of disappointing. It had lots of data, but like the amount of feedback it could give was like, I'm so looking forward to like the personalized data that I'm going to be able to get from AI, not just for my life and for my sleeping, but like for all the work that we're doing, all the marketing reports. Like how many conversations have we as marketers been in where we're just trying to like look at the dashboard? It's like, well, like, but what's going on? The dashboard's broken. We don't have the right data. Like the AI will be able to be personalized and actually make so much more sense of what's going on better than humans because it's consistently checking things so much more and faster. This is like the world that I know tech companies are currently working on that isn't here quite yet, but even the AI at the ground level is going to be able to better customize the experience for it. I'm here for it.
So there's a really good point there. You talked a few weeks ago about customizing your GPTs to so it writes like you do by feeding it your LinkedIn data. Something to that effect is this shines a spotlight on these companies at the B2B marketing level. Where are they going to get that data from on their current client base? Remember, you got to feed and train machinery to do this. So at scale and mass, your access to the data around your own client base becomes an asset that most companies don't have a strong handle on. You know, if you look at Salesforce.com or your whatever CRM you're doing, you got to be able to pull info out of that in an intelligent fashion, clean it and feed it. And this is a whole new headache.
Yeah. Which if I'm a marketer trying to predict like what's going to be really important in the future. So like, what can I start doing now to be prepared a year or two from now where future self is like, ah, good job, past self. You made the right call because this is actually everybody else is catching up and we're ahead. I think thinking about what, like knowing where AI is at and will be in the future, how can you start collecting the right kind of data so that 2 years from now, AI has way more to go off of and can make way better forecasts, way better predictions. Like what kind of things should we be thinking about now as marketers that we need to start collecting and architecting in a way that AI can make sense of it? I even think from a personal brand sense, like even me posting to LinkedIn a lot, well, I have 3 years worth of posts and data to go off of now that I can download from LinkedIn, or I connect to something like Shield and it can give me like the actual view counts on all my posts. And it'll be able to make correlations on it, but I have that data available. But what else is available to companies that we should be thinking about and architecting now?
So here's a real handy tip, and it's going to apply to what you just said. In a meta sense, you want to pull back the camera and take a look at why you, whomever you are, make the decisions you do in your daily work, right? So in other words, you want to understand that eventually you're going to need to build templates and blueprints of how you operate for the machine to do it. It's very similar to when you hire an employee or you have to figure out, you know, to tell them what to do. Or if you don't understand why you do it, and I know I teach sales training classes, and oftentimes, you know, how do you broker a conversation with a customer? And you have to stop and think to yourself, well, why do I, okay, things like eye contact, body language, like it doesn't always come to mind, but from a marketing perspective, how do you know what you should be posting about? What goes into that decision in your own head that you can then set that up as a template later on? So taking a look at what you do and why you do it, number one. Number two, what data do you actually use to do that? Once I decide, okay, I need to write a post. Right now I'm working on something around sales and the automation of sales.
Yeah.
What data do you then look at to make your decisions for marketing? And then finally, how effective was it? You have to self-analyze and be like, okay, that campaign wasn't good. This one was. We already do that. But you have to do that for yourself now.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I think to me, it's really about the qualitative data more than anything. Like where am I getting qualitative data and how am I analyzing it? Like I had a podcast episode where we talked about capturing survey data, qualitative survey data, and how they're using AI now to like actually write analysis on it and then do analysis on the analysis to like speed up the process that it takes to get the insights. I think every marketer needs to be thinking about that. Where is your data currently going? Quantitative, of course, but then qualitative. But Dan, you could be building a library for it to track the trends over time.
Did you give much thought to the qualitative data you were doing back in the old marketing days? Like, it's not a natural thing for most marketers to look at themselves with a second pair of eyes and be like, okay, what are we looking at for data here? That, unless that's the project.
I mean, I felt like I was because my first real thing, the first time I was really doing marketing, I was running AdWords and running split test campaigns. And so it was always data driven from the beginning. And I only got more creative and brandy and social media stuff later on. But I started off in the quant doing split testing my ads campaigns with Perry Marshall was like my go-to guy, and Flint McLaughlin on the like McLabs doing like these like statistically valid split tests. So I knew which one was right and trying to track it all the way through. Like, yeah, but which ad and landing page combo made more sense down the line? You know, at the very beginning, I didn't have the data to track it through, but I was thinking like that.
So you built a muscle doing all that, which makes me think that maybe the folks in that corner of marketing have a leg up. I mean, I don't know. Nobody knows. But the point is, if you thought through the process in your own head, and probably when you were doing your A-B split tests or whatever you were doing, you did the same thing every time to try to follow your own process. So you got the best data at the end. That's a way of thinking, let's call it, a methodology that marketers are going to have to adapt.
Yeah, my opinion, every marketer needs to start with that, right? I mean, I think even Ogilvy said like every marketer should start with performance marketing, right?
But how many brand guys are out there just like, I'm a graphic designer.
Just winging it.
And I know my color scheme.
It's all about the story. You're like, yes, but do you know why it's all about the story? Can you measure
it?
You know?
Which gets at human psychology. That's another aspect. Like, how well do you understand people? That's an interesting, that combination of quant and qual, I think, becomes important. Yep.
So you brought up some news just before this call about Apple being in talks with Google about integrating Google's AI into Apple.
Yeah.
Tell me about why that's catching your attention.
So this is rumors right now, but there's a Bloomberg story came out recently, like I think it was yesterday, that Apple and Google may be in talks to potentially bring Gemini onto the iPhone. And the reason I think that matters, and I mentioned to you briefly at the start, respectfully speaking, Apple's been a trailing horse in the race with AI, right? Google and OpenAI, Microsoft and Google have been the, and then you've got in the third place there, Amazon with Claude, Anthropic. Fine. Yep. But Apple's been nowhere to be seen. Now they have so much money, you can't take them lightly. But my opinion is, and I call them the Dr. Pepper of the Coca-Cola world, they have to pair up and partner to become either with Amazon or someone else to become a relevant player. And Google has had a bad stumble with Gemini. They need a way to reach a new user base, if you will. And Apple could give them that. And Apple gets a horse in the race, basically. So this is all just rumor right now. But I could, you know, it's been reported by Bloomberg that they're in conversations. I could totally see it.
I've been paying attention to the Apple stuff. The Bloomberg article you sent me was news to me. I'm surprised. And I'm like, Apple in talks with Google? I'm like, they're not exactly on like friendly terms sometimes. You know, these but big money. Companies, like, they get on each other's nerves because there's so much overlap between these general products. I mean, they all have their silos, but there's overlap too.
Philosophically, though, Apple's a freedom of speech kind of company, and Google is a micromanagement, you know, Facebook centralized authority thing.
Right.
So that's not a great bedfellows. But meanwhile, they both are trailing, and Microsoft is about to run away with the race. So that I could see this.
Yeah. I mean, Apple's typically the company that, like, was working on it actually the whole time and then like launches after everybody else has kind of like run through the mud and hit like the walls, and they come out with the thing that makes it popular. I mean, like the Vision Pro thing.
Yeah.
Like, I just got off a phone call with my brother this morning, and he took the phone call on FaceTime, and he had the Vision Pro on his face. And I was like, did you just go skiing, bro? I'm like, okay, tell me, how was the experience? How was it? He's like, dude, I was just standing in the middle of Joshua Tree.
That's amazing.
And I almost started crying because I looked and it felt like I was there. It was so good. Wow. When that, even in the dinosaur demo, like we've all seen, he's like, dude, when that butterfly flaps next to your hand, you literally feel the wings flap. He's like, it's the weirdest thing. I'm like, dang, leave it to Apple to really, because I've tested like the MetaQuest and all that kind of stuff, but I haven't tested Apple's thing. But I'm like, leave it to Apple to make it so good that people are like, ah, because he told me, he's like, dude, I thought $3,500 this thing was stupid. Now I'm like, I can see it now.
I'm picturing a scene in The Matrix when Neo says, I thought it wasn't real. And Morpheus is like, your mind makes it real.
Yeah. Your mind makes it real, dude. I know. That's the comment I made. I'm like, we are plugged into The Matrix, aren't we? It's a glitch.
I remember a comment from Gary a couple of years back at a talk, and he was like, I don't, if these things are finally working perfectly, I don't see why anyone would ever take them off.
Yeah. That's the scary part. All kinds of implications there. But the reason why I bring it up is because Apple tends to wait and do things in private, in secret, and then they launch and it changes the game. And I don't know, people have been talking a lot about Apple over the last few months, talking about how they've actually made more AI acquisitions than Google or Microsoft or any of the big companies over the last couple of years, saying, no, they're probably ahead or at least on par, and they just haven't released their thing yet. And everyone's kind of expecting that at the next big developer conference, they might be launching something like this summer.
I have a couple thoughts on this. This is kind of controversial. Number one, I didn't even know they had the name for the thing. Like, have you ever heard of it? It's called Ajax, which is their competitor of Gemini or Claude. Like,
isn't that a code language?
That's what they're calling their LLM. This is Apple. So secret, as you put it, that like it's not ready for release yet. But more importantly, I want to just take a look, get past the tech and look at the companies. When you're in such a fast-changing space as AI, you need a visionary leader who knows where we're going. You know, like, I'm not promoting him, but a guy like Musk, whether you agree or not, has his thoughts on where it should go. Apple doesn't have that. Cook is a great manager of an existing business line, but they're not the visionary Steve Jobs company that they were back when, which is why they just kept releasing new versions of the iPhone at different screen sizes. So when you're dealing in AI, you're going to be severely challenged if you don't have the visionary inside to just keep chasing, which is what they've been doing. So I feel like they're not the company for this because the space changes so fast. Now, you don't want to shortchange Apple. They're great, but it's...
I don't know, but look at Watch. Did you know, like, Apple Watch sells more watches than any other watchmaker combined?
I did not
like
know
right
that.
Now?
They're cool, though. I can see
Apple
why.
AirPods dominated, right? It's like,
but
the
those
top
were a better mousetrap.
Or headphones. And then Vision, we'll see where Vision Pro goes, though early indicators seem like it's very much a Gen 1 product, but people's experiences of it say that there's going to be a Gen 2 and a Gen 3, and it's going to be way better. Do you remember Gen 1 iPad?
I do.
And then Gen 2 came out, was like way better, right? So I'm like, well, we'll see what Gen 2 is. I'm curious to see where Apple lands. The reason why I'm curious, because what Apple does affects everything, right? Like, yeah, as far as technology goes. And when they can make something mainstream and make it easy, so easy for people that everybody's doing it now, It changes it for the pro, because it's so mainstream that there's more money in the environment, more people know how to use this stuff, more people educated on new ways of doing things, that it opens up a whole different category in a market when Apple finally goes into it, which is why I think Apple and AI is so interesting right now.
I think that you nailed it, that they come in and they codify it for the public usage after there's like when the rough asphalt gets poured onto the pavement there, and then the steamroller comes through and makes it smooth so people can drive on it. That's Apple. And so they're going to take what existed out there, make a better version, make it all the stuff that doesn't quite work right, they get it right.
Yeah.
Cords that you can't unplug, that you can't accidentally kick out because they're magnetically attached. Like, that's silly stuff, but really usable stuff. I think that you're right. Apple matters, but they're just not going to be the innovator.
Right. And the Achilles heel they've had for a long time is Siri. So, like, you got to know they've been thinking about Siri for a long time, like, Siri, and thinking about that. They know it sucks. Like, everybody knows Siri is like last place, even though it's like
a
cutting
meme
edge
now.
Remember Siri when it was just an app?
Yeah.
It used to just be a separate company. I remember trying it, being like, huh, that'll be interesting someday.
Yeah. Siri has become a meme at this point. They needed to do so. It's the Ask Jeeves of like LLMs.
So imagine if Siri actually caught up to ChatGPT and then got the Apple magic to it. And now you're having conversations with AI, and it's actually like, it's more personable than ChatGPT-4, and actually has conversations and goes like, huh, okay, yeah, let me think about that a little bit. You know, it's actually having like real human conversations. Yeah, that'll be weird.
So there's
like, that's what Apple will launch. It'll launch the version of Siri that we all saw in sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
Like Jarvis in Iron Man. It'll be like that fluid.
I agree with you. How many iPhone users are there right now? It's got to be a billion, right? There's, I'm Googling this right now. The point is like, that's the access that Google suddenly has to people who are going to be, because you know how it goes. Once it's on your device, you get comfortable with it. You're not going to, you're cemented in. I think that this is a really interesting play for Google. I also think that we're overlooking the fact that Google really has an issue with this whole woke AI backlash. People won't use it if they think it's too woke. Now, you make it easy, they don't care. Right? Everyone knows that they're giving away their data when they surf the internet, but it's so easy, who cares?
Yep.
My point is the iPhone integration would be a huge thing for Google. And yes, it would definitely bring Siri out of the Stone Age and make it a competitive product.
There's 1.46 billion active iPhone users in the
there
world.
There you go. It's bigger.
No, it's not a billion. Oh, it's bigger than that.
It's a lot of people that suddenly Google has permanently in their back pocket, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, craziness. Let's move on to ChatGPT or GPT-5. It's a big conversation. Has been ever since 4 came out. When is 5 going to come? Like as soon as 4 drops, that was like the next question people had. When is 5 going to come? And some people thought it was going to launch like a week ago or 2 weeks ago or so. Thought it might be showing up in March because it'd kind of like be the year-long anniversary since 4 came out. Hasn't come out yet, but everybody's talking about it. And a lot of people have looked at what Sam Altman says, like patents, what other people within OpenAPI have said about it. And everybody, it's on everybody's mind as far as what's going to come out. Because right now, ChatGPT or GPT-4 is the standard for all AI. And every once in a while, you'll see like Claude putting out benchmark reports like, oh, we outperform it. But it's like slightly, like the 4 is still the standard. Congratulations, you slightly beat the standard, but it hasn't really taken the next step forward. So we've had this 4 as the standard for a year now. And everybody's wondering when it'll come next. I think it matters in marketing because right now we really haven't even like figured out all the ways to take advantage of 4.
I was going
to
say that.
We're still in like the beginning stages of figuring out even what to do with 4. Yet 5 is probably around the corner and could be released anytime.
So a couple of thoughts here. One, people's expectations are hilarious to me. This thing advanced so quickly from November of 22 till now, it's astronomical. And people are now like stomping their feet. Where's the next thing? So to your point, Dan, we haven't even scratched the surface of what something like Sora, combining that with GPT-4 Turbo, like what you can do so much that we don't even know about yet. Forget about what's known. But also, it reminds me of the wireless internet providers. When we went from 4G networks to 5G networks, like they just decided it's the fifth generation. This is 5G. There's no like standard of what wireless should be or is because it was so new. And we're there now with like AI. At what point does it go from, 4 to 5? When they say. So then it becomes a marketing thing of, hey, we got the 5G1. We got the 5G1A. So my point is that this will morph into a marketing argument down the road of what's what. But the reality is who gets the tools down, who can build workflows, who can figure out how to use these things. That's how it's going to separate the winners from the losers in both companies and individuals.
When I was in my early 20s, I think I was 20, and I was like one of those guys that's like dying inside because I wanted to get married really young, but I knew I wasn't ready.
Yeah,
to get married young. I wasn't ready to get married at 19. I wasn't married to get ready at 20. I'm like, in my mind, I had it. I'm like at 22, 23. This is, it needs to happen by 23, 24. I mean, it can only happen as fast as like that can happen. But
yeah,
I'm like, in the meantime, since even if I was in a relationship and ready to get engaged, I personally am not ready. I'm not ready financially. I'm not ready like emotionally, socially, like in all the ways I'm not ready. So I took it upon myself to be ready in every possible way. I was like, okay, what does it look like to be ready? What does ready look like? What is a proper, a young man ready to be married look like? And I started just reverse engineering that and taking the time. I'm like, well, if I'm not ready yet, then let's start doing the things to get ready.
Right.
So that when I do meet the right woman like this, I'll be ready and then we can move forward.
Right.
I think this that same mindset is now how I'm thinking about ChatGPT-5. I'm like, okay, it's not here. It's going to be here someday, but I'm going to do everything I can to be ready for it when it does come, because we know it's going to be better. It's going to be more personalized, like we talk about. It's a big priority for OpenAI. It's going to be, and another thing they've talked about is it's going to be more rational. Right now, sometimes it's irrational.
Yeah.
You're like, only ask me one question at a time. And then it goes and asks you two. You're like, did you forget the one question rule? They're like, right. Oh yeah, you're right. And then it asks you two questions again. You know, it's just weird sometimes. It has these little clubs in it.
I love when it gives you a choice of answers and you're like, what?
Knowing that that'll be fixed in the future. How can we start? What assumptions it's not an assumption of if it's going to be better. It will be better. It'll probably be within the next year, even if it's not till 2 years out. What can we start doing to learn and prepare and make the most out of 4 in this season that we're in, so that when 5 comes, we're already there. Like, we were already had processes in place. We just plug it in, and now everything we were doing was better.
So if the past is any indicative of the future here, you know, any guide, when we went from 3 to 3.5 to 4, there were things that it couldn't do previous that now it could, right? So the text-to-speech got better, the text-to-video.
Yep. Yep.
But then there were things that it just never could do that suddenly it could. And you wouldn't have known that if you didn't dabble in it. So when you were at GPT-3, trying to get it to do stuff it just can't do, but all of a sudden at 4 it does. That type of person, it's what you're doing right now. That's what you need to be doing. You're like, well, okay, how can I bang on this keyboard a little bit with 4 turbo and see what it can't do? Because guess what? That's probably going to be solved. It will, yep. Not meaning that they're going to code it and program it. It will solve itself over yep. time as it learns. So 5 is going to be markedly better. I don't know how. Like, we won't be able to predict this. The one thing we know is to expect the unexpected. But the people who jump on it first, it's just like marketing where, you know, when funnels were first a thing, or when the webinar became the way to reach people. Like, who did it here in my garage, right? Whoever did it first leverages gets an advantage. That's what's going to happen with this 5 when it gets here. But until then, all you can do is experiment.
Gosh, the first, that lesson that you learned there about being first, I think in companies, I would get mad if I wasn't the first. Like, if we adopted a new big piece of software in the marketing department or in the company, and I wasn't the first one in, I was so mad. I wanted to be the first one to learn it and do everything. And at some point, they're like, Dan, you're a director now. You don't need to be the first one learning it. Delegate that. I'm like, no, it's mine. Like, because I understood, like, if I'm the first one in making all the mistakes, I know everything about it.
I can see you.
I become the master of commander of this thing, because nobody else. Then what does somebody else do when they get stuck?
Yeah, but so how many? This is a real question. What's the ratio? What would be the ratio of people that you worked with that would come to you and be like, Dan, I don't have any of that knowledge. What should I do? How should we be using this? Versus a guy like you, there were other guys, I'm sure, but not a lot, who were like, I'm going to roll my sleeves up and just put my hands in the blood and guts here.
I don't know. I love going into the maze and hitting all the dead ends. I'm like, now I know where all the dead ends are. And somebody gives you a map of the maze and knows how to go through it. Great. You know how to get through the maze, but you don't know what's in there.
Right.
It's totally different. And it's different when you like go into software that's like sophisticated, like HubSpot, and you know every nook and cranny, you know all the legacy things that are still there, but you know, are still actually useful for some things, like all the weird nooks and crannies of software. And it's going to be the same thing for AI. Like, there's legacy parts of AI now. That if you're like, right now I'm starting to get into the API, and there's some legacy parts in there that I tinkered with before, where it's like, I don't even know what they call it, because I didn't use it enough, but like, you could give it a rating on like how strong, like how concise or loose you wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. That's becoming like they're phasing that out now.
Temperature. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, there's all those kinds of things, but if you're in it actively using it and wrestling with it and getting answers and wrestling with other people on it, there's such a massive advantage in that.
I want to put that in context for people to understand this, because I think it's worth repeating this. You're right. People who have the skill sets from having done it are always going to be better at using the tool from those who don't. So if you're a copywriter and you're an expert copywriter, you're going to get better results out of this GPT thing than someone who's like, oh, I can replace my copywriter. Absolutely. And that's where the benefit comes from, digging into it, finding out what it can't do, everything you just described. Most people don't want to do that. They just want the shortcut. Get me the blueprint, template that I can use. And that's a weakness now, not when it's changing this fast.
Everybody needs to take their expertise and see how AI can amplify it. copywriters, right. designers. If we're running PPC, like, I guess that's even cliche, like old to call it PPC now, paid media, right?
Yeah.
If you're running paid media, like how could you be using it to do everything that you do? Sure, it doesn't do it as well, but learning how it could, and right. know it might be more in the future, like may help make helping you make decisions. And then you start to find out where it can augment some of your work, some better, some worse. Like you need to be experimenting with all of that so that you become the person that knows how to do it with AI. And your expertise will be able to go farther faster. Because you already know the thing better than everybody else.
Yeah, but most businesses at the executive levels anyway, I run into, are making the mistake of thinking that they have a Ferrari, but they don't know how to drive. Like it matters. Yeah. It doesn't matter the tool if you don't know how to get the most out of it.
Yeah. I've heard that scenario for like every major piece of software I've ever installed. And
it's like, the same.
We have a Ferrari in the garage and we don't know how to take it out. I've been like, well, give me the manual.
Dan's putting on his gloves. Hold on a moment. Hold my beer.
Like, wait.
No, I think that the thing that people should be doing right now is just experimenting at night. And you don't get paid for this, but if you want to have a career, you got to do that.
So we've been talking a lot about all the things that are coming. Like we've talked about like 95% of marketers being replaced. Everybody needs to be learning. I want to finish up with what you think is the path to mastering AI. We've talked about dabbling. We've talked about correlating your expertise into it. What do you think are some like really clear stepping stones for marketers to be going beyond logging in and using ChatGPT a little bit?
So my answer might surprise you, Dan. Number one, believe it or not, I think the sales discipline matters. I think that we're going to see a coming together of sales and marketing because profiling your customer, your client type, and then automating outreach, that those functions are not going to be as separated as they used to be. I could be wrong, but I really feel like if you don't know your sales stuff, you should learn it. And if you're a salesperson, you better know marketing. Secondly, also non-tech related, networking. There's nowhere to go to learn from this. We talked about this previous. So chatting with people like you and I or folks who that you know are dabbling in it like you are, that's where you're going to learn. There's no, you know, we share articles, Dan, you and I, and that's really helpful for me especially. But if you don't have a network of people that are kind of doing what you're doing, you're just going to read about it in the Wall Street Journal. You're a little late. And then thirdly is sharing your mistakes. You're a master at this. I've dabbled in this and here's what didn't work and here's why. It's really educational for both you and other people. And it encourages community building. So those three aspects, I think if you really want to master AI, it's more than just knowing the tools. You can't keep up with all the tools, but all of us can if we share the knowledge. Right. If I'm dabbling in the video side of it, you're dabbling in the copywriting side of it, and we compare notes, that's great. My point is networking, sharing mistakes, being able to just do more than, and of course, experiment at night. Obviously, we should be doing that too.
Dang, you just reminded me. I got some more failures to share too. In the AI world, I'm like,
great.
I'm thinking of some failures right now. I need to get out there before they become too stale.
I had a back and forth this morning that when you share your failures, it makes you relatable. People, it's a community building tool.
Coming back to your sales thing though, there's a lot, there's
you
a lot,
that.
There's
you
books and aspect. Books and books and libraries filled with like sales methodology books. What are some of the practicals you would give to a marketer that has never been in sales?
Forget about all like the sales, you know, the challenger sale and all the ways of selling. It's not about that. It's the fact that your relationship building extends beyond just marketing. It's just relationship building. If you think about it as an overarching umbrella, and that's how I think of it. It doesn't matter if it's marketing where I'm outreaching to you cold or if I'm selling where we're having I'm pitching you a closing, you know, discovery call, whatever. If you think of it as relationship building and you're truly trying to build rapport, extend that relationship right straight through to past when you would normally contact them, there's no reason one person can't ride that all the way through now with these tools. And I think that's the old role of the chief revenue officer. It's just going to be automated in terms of the execution, but the strategic overarch of building a relationship that you can close, I always say selling is helping, but so is marketing. Like proper marketing done right isn't pressuring them and pounding them. It's educating them and bringing them along the funnel, whatever you want to call it. I think that understanding the disciplines of both marketing and sales and how to extend from one into the other, because I really don't see them as different anymore. Like, marketing is the front end of selling.
You know, that's really good. And I think that's well within a marketer's capability of just building relationships. Yeah. Because you're right. It is, while there's more to sales, that's an ultimate skill set that you can build, and it will make you a better marketer, but it also is the big piece that becomes part of sales. The first big thing that I was doing in podcasting, because this was Sweetfish's big thing, was what James called content-based networking, or building relationships by having people onto your podcasts, sometimes influencers, sometimes potential partners, sometimes prospects. I still have shows where I do this for some of my clients, where we find prospects and we build a relationship with them, not so we can pitch them, but like just so we can even say, hey, how's it going? What are you into? Like, yeah. what are you thinking about as far as that your topic of expertise goes? And relationship building is the main component of it, anything, because they might not even buy from you now. They might buy from you two companies from where they're at now. You know,
you're right. And that's the part that most of B2B doesn't like, but it's the reality. I'll give you a 3-word sales lesson for every marketer. It's the easiest thing in the world. Tell me more. That's it. When you get going and you tell someone, you know, you're building a relationship with them through marketing. Now you're actually speaking with them. And it might be DM, it might be through the machinery. That's fine. But when they say something, you just tell me more. Tell me more about you. Childlike curiosity is how Hormozy puts it. You want to explore with them and let them guide it. Because the thing about selling, there's no persuasion anymore. Not in a world of digital connection. There's only, they feel understood enough and feel like they understand your solution that they want to move forward. And when you hit that phase, you don't have to say anything. Tell me more. They'll tell you everything eventually, like, this is what we do. And they'll be like, okay, well, the next step clearly becomes evident. Yep. It's not, there's no more selling the way we used to think of it.
And if you're listening to this or watching this, chances are you're, based on the amount of people I see view posts and videos and who comment, and it's always the same people who comment, right? So what they call the 99-1 rule, you know, 90% are just lurkers, 9% are engagers, and 1% are the creators. Get out of the 90% and join at least the 9%. This is where relationship building starts to happen. You got to start. It's the safest place. Even if you're the most timid introvert, just start engaging people in the comments, especially on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is so nice. People are not out to get you. People are generally want to be as helpful as possible. They're incentivized to be, because most of the people in the comments are the people selling B2B.
Right.
Most of the people in there are people that are trying to have an incentive to be engaged in those relationships. And they know that being helpful is the game. And honestly, I love that. I love that about LinkedIn. People call it fake. I'm like, or it's just the right incentives of making people kind and helpful. I'm like, it's great. So start on LinkedIn with commenting and having conversations with people, asking questions like, oh, tell me more about that. Can you give me an example of that? When did that work out for you? How would you approach it in this situation that I'm in? Gosh, people love answering that. And then you can follow up with the DM and tell them that you did it. Oh man, this is where relationships start to get built, because there's nothing better than going to someone, telling you implemented what they suggested and then what you did, and then have a follow-up question. Man, you'll start to build relationships real fast just by taking people's advice, telling them what you did, and then asking them more questions about it.
I'll give you another sales tip here. The one topic, no matter who they are, that people love to talk about, one topic, no matter who it is, in any scenario, business or otherwise, is themselves. If you get them talking about themselves and specifically their mistakes, if you had advice to give, what would be the one thing you would tell me to do differently? Because I'm trying to do what you did. People love sharing that stuff. And it's not cheesy. You can benefit from it. And they have lived the hard knocks life. They want to not have wasted it.
And people are interesting. They have interesting things to say. You never know where good stories are going to come from. So that's fantastic. And when it comes to mastering AI, the one thing I come back to just tactically over and over again, I need to make it like a mini course on this, because I've had enough friends ask me now, like, hey, this is where I'm at. How do I get to where you're at? And I'm like, I'm not even sure where I'm at. I'm still trying to figure out where I'm at in the map here. But one thing or two, three steps that I find that anybody can take to learn more about AI is, one, first step. Assuming you've been playing around with ChatGPT and you've been in there and you've prompted it and you've gotten some stuff out of it, Google the term super prompt. It's a massive step forward. Just
explain
Google word super prompt, watch a few YouTube videos, different people stack super prompts in different ways. It doesn't matter. Learn what they are, start using them. Once you've used super prompts, and just again, to give you an idea, is essentially it's a longer, more specific prompt. Every time you prompt AI, you're essentially delegating something to it. The more specific you can be, the better the answer back. And there's also some weird things about AI. It's kind of like, hey, if I tell it to be an expert lawyer and I ask it for advice on law, it's going to give you better advice back for some reason. It takes on that persona and all of a sudden it does better. There's a bunch of little oddities like that you just kind of have to get used to with AI, but it's great. Like, it's how to get more out of it. We've all figured this out now. So do the super prompt that people have, that will level you up from your normal prompts now, super prompts. From there, what do they call this? I'm blanking on it. It's like a step-by-step prompt or a chain prompt. That's what they call it, which is really like a step-by-step super prompt. It's almost always has a super prompt component to it, but it has a, hey, load a massive super prompt. And I don't talk about paragraphs. A super prompt can be as long as a one long sentence, maybe two or three sentences as a super prompt. And then it gives you an answer, but then you are specifically ready with another prompt based on what it gave you. So it's like you're almost helping it think through a multi-step thing. Learning how to do chain prompts is learning how to get more out of AI. It's learning how to draw it out rather than try to get it all out in one chunk. How to help AI take baby steps in getting to a master plan. You can't just ask it for a marketing plan. You can, but it'll give you a crap marketing plan. But if you prompt it correctly, you actually can pull out quite a pretty good strategic marketing plan if you give it the right data and have it go through the right steps in the right order, just like a human would have to do. All of a sudden, the amount of work you can get it done with AI is way better. So prompting, super prompts, chain prompts. From there, you start automating it with custom GPTs, and the custom GPTs are literally just getting more out of your super and chain prompts, and that's it. Those are like the basic building major steps, but steps you can take to mastering AI.
Dan, I'd love to share like a 6-step prompting formula, if that's okay.
Sure.
I feel like this is helpful. It's something I use. And in the beginning, I thought people would might benefit from this. So there's an acronym called BRIGHT, BRIGHT. And this is how the 6 steps in prompting that I feel is for a beginner, this is the way to start. Number one is the brand. What is your brand, your company? What do you do? Just tell the thing, hey, I am a content marketer in the fintech space and I whatever. R is the role. You act as a, right? You're an expert in copywriting, you're an expert in videographer, you're an expert in whatever, you know, be Dan Sanchez, you give it its role. I is the instructions. I want you to tell me exactly how to construct this outreach letter. I want you to come up with a script for YouTube. I want you to, whatever the thing is, these are the instructions. The goal is the G. The goal of this exercise is I want to be able to attract viewers to my YouTube channel. I want to be able to land customer outreach, whatever. The H is how to do it. I would like them to do this, or I would like to be able to get them on a phone call. I would like to be able to have them sign up my landing page, the how. And the T is the target. Who are the actual people we're trying to reach? These will be, you know, millennials in the marketing space. These will be middle-aged boomers, whatever it is. Describe. In BRIGHT, BRIGHT, the brand, role, instructions, goal, how, and target. By doing that, you'll, no matter what, you'll get a better output than you would have otherwise just by saying, write me a letter that reaches these customers.
Yeah. And man, that's so good. It has a lot of overlap, but I think this is the best one that I've seen so far. I've even taken other people's and tried to make acronyms with it. To some degree, I'm like, well, maybe not an acronym. Maybe it's alliteration. I'm like, so this one's already built. I haven't even come across this one yet, but I think I'm just going to start using
this. We only deliver the best here at AI in the Sky. the AI Q&A, right. QA,
brand,
make sure.
Role, instructions, goal, how to do it, target. Now, the one, as you read through them, the two that overlap the most is instructions and how to do it. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between those two?
So the instructions are, here's what I want you to do. I want you to write me an article about AI. It's just generally, this is what the thing needs to do. The how to do it is what you want the people to do in response. So I would like, the goal of this is that we land customers, how they call me, they contact me, they follow, they want to go attend the webinar. The how will I engage with the prospects? And then who are the prospects?
So it's almost like the how is more the context of where... Yes. How the instructions fit into the overall thing.
How is more what should happen next if this thing is successful.
Yeah. So in a lot of these super prompts, there's usually a place for context that I've seen. So that's really, it's been
a good way to put it. It's the
context. It's been kind of fudged in there with how, but still giving context. Like oftentimes when I'm building these AI custom GPTs, I'm often giving it a template to go off of. If it's crafting an email, I have a template of what a good email looks like. And then I have an example of what it properly executed looks like. I give it both, sometimes with details in it to like almost prompts within the template to keep it going if I need it to be more specific. But the context matters so much. If you can give it almost like we've said before, it's like a genius intern. If you can just make the super tiny baby steps, it's so good at executing it. If you just are clear about what you want.
See, Dan, this is the type of stuff where you can put this into a prompt template and pump this bright or whatever you want to use into your own GPT and just be, and these are the types of things that people need to learn. Like you, if you're putting together a course, stuff like this, most marketers don't get there because they don't have the time. They're busy. So it's helpful.
Yep. I'm sure somebody's put together a course on it, but usually the courses I see are like, here's the 100 prompts you need. I'm like, dude, I don't want 100 prompts. Tell me how to prompt.
You know what else I think is the missing element? Here's the sales piece again. Information is free. In a Google AI world, info doesn't matter. I can get everything I need from ChatGPT. Stories matter. When Dan Sanchez tells me, here's the acronym to help you prompt better, and then tells me a story of the actual prompt he wrote for a situation, it sticks. So that's the piece where all these courses are lacking. They're just information.
That's good. Now I'm going to follow up with that. I'm going to launch my course. I'm going to put some stories in it.
I'll sell it
put it out there for free, of course. But let's wrap this up. Thanks for joining me or joining us so much. Wow, I'm really fumbling it at the end.
That's
yay,
right.
Live.
Live is great. This is what people love, though. It's all right.
And usually I'm so used to recording it and cutting out these parts, but I'm like, fun to do it live. Here we go. Thank you so much for joining us for AI in the Sky, where, again, we're covering these AI from a 10,000-foot view, bringing it down to the ground to bring some context for marketers. Hopefully you found this helpful. Give us some feedback. Find us on LinkedIn. It's where we spend most of our time. And let us know what you thought.
Thanks for listening, everybody.